I'm Steve Lascalzo. This is The Way. You're listening to This is The Way podcast's discussion of Ahsoka Season 1, Episode 5. It's Part 5, titled Shadow Warrior. A moment about the podcast and me, the host. About a decade and a half ago, I left a career in sports broadcasting, but I wanted to keep sharp some of the skills I used daily when putting stories together. I liked Star Wars more than most of my friends, and there was this new show coming out, The Mandalorian, way back in November of 2019. I wanted to see if I could get people interested enough to follow along. Since the debut of Disney Plus, I've podcasted about several Star Wars shows on this channel, and I even covered Marvel's Phase 4 for a little while on a separate channel. My goal with this podcast, the one you're listening to right now, is to enjoy speculating about Star Wars. Where is Dave Filoni taking us with Ahsoka? Can I talk about it and entertain and capture some of the excitement with listeners? Since I consume a lot of Star Wars content, I feel like it's only right that I use that knowledge, or some of it that I may come across, to help explain what's happening. I know people don't always keep up with Star Wars in all its forms. Well, Ahsoka premiered with two episodes on the same day, August 22nd, 2023. But the next week, and until all eight episodes are out, the show releases an episode a week each Tuesday. That's the character of Chopper, but the one providing the voice for Chopper is Dave Filoni. You know, his voice is run through filters, altered significantly, obviously, but he voiced the character on Rebels, and there's no indication he wants to stop there. Filoni is also responsible for creating the character of Ahsoka, and he's now the unofficially official caretaker for so many characters he's directly or indirectly responsible for bringing to life in animation. He's protective of those characters. George Lucas handpicked his drawing of Ahsoka to become the model for Anakin Skywalker's apprentice in the Clone Wars movie and animated series. Lucas also mentored Filoni so that he's seen by many as the spiritual successor to creation of new Star Wars lore, but it's more than just my imagination on that part. In 2020, he was named an executive producer and creative director at Lucasfilm, perhaps as a result of the successful first season of The Mandalorian.
Just pointing it out.
A few years earlier, he'd struck up a friendship with Jon Favreau, and together, they've brought a few Star Wars stories to life on Disney Plus in TV serial form. If Filoni learned from Lucas how the future of the Force should play out, he learned from Favreau how to use brand new technologies like the volume and new ways to tell stories in the Star Wars universe. Look, the first season of The Mandalorian, it was a tone setter, and the first episode's final moment captivated the world. Filoni created Ahsoka, nurtured the character throughout the animated Clone Wars series and Rebels, and to the live-action realm in The Mandalorian's second season. Now he's the showrunner of the Ahsoka series. He directed the premiere, and he directed this latest episode, Shadow Warrior. Filoni also gets sole writing credit on all eight episodes of the season. Some of the choices made during Part 5 could probably only have been made by Filoni. The world between worlds absolutely functions differently in live action than it did in The Clone Wars and Rebels, and Dave Filoni was the one that brought it to those shows. I don't think it's a bad thing, but Dave Filoni directing made possible much of what we saw.
Okay, then.
He didn't create the end credit sequence, though. That has remained the same since the first episode, and it's a creation of You and Company, Y-U plus C-O. The company finally addressed the creation of the sequence in an Instagram post on Monday, September 11th. It said, "For the Star Wars series Ahsoka, we worked with the show's creator, Dave Filoni, to craft a main, on-end journey that crosses the Star Wars galaxy. We follow Ahsoka's route using a design that was inspired by ancient star maps, but updated with a dynamic 3D treatment. The planets and star systems are labeled in the Dathomir language, while the film's credits are made with a custom font we designed for the show. You can listen to our podcast, This Is The Way Podcast, episode 137, for a list of translated runes. And at the time, nobody knew that that was the Dathomir language. I do recommend, listen to our podcast, but also search YouTube for a visual translation where you can see those Dathomir runes and at the same time, the translation. Playing over the end credit sequence is Kevin Kiner's end credit Ahsoka theme, and it's available to stream on most music services now and on YouTube. Also now available, music and themes from the first four episodes, available on most streaming services as of September 15th. Volume 1 can be found easily on Amazon Music, Pandora, Spotify, and there's more than the end theme for you to enjoy there. It is great work. And now we just have to wait for volume 2.
Gosh, I've been doing this for 30 years and I still get really excited. I can see Dave's having fun with the show and I'm really going to have a lot of fun with the show.
The runtime for Shadow Warrior shows up as 52 minutes in parentheses on the Disney Plus show page, but that's not actually how long it takes if you're just going to watch the action. From first shot to cut to credits actually runs around 44 minutes on the nose. That's from the Forest of Cetos to the Star Whale jump to hyperspace sequence. The first episode was a little over 50 minutes. The second, under 37. The third, less than a half hour. Part 4 was a little more than a half hour, and in episode 5, we almost hit 3/4 of an hour. The description of the episode reads, Ahsoka confronts her past, while Hera and her allies undertake a rescue mission. Director of photography, Quyen Tran, who was co-DP in episode 2, but solo once again like she was in episode 3. This one might be one she uses for her professional reel, her resume tape. She framed the work of the production design team well. The Andrew L. Jones and Doug Chang duo credited once again. Editor was Roseanne Tan. She edited part 2, Toil and Trouble, as well. With this show, Ahsoka, I've tried to rotate a credit in each week for some part of the show. The team that makes up the show, they show up in the main credits, but it's a group that often gets overlooked. This week, I think I'll mention set decorator Amanda Serino and property master Josh Roth. Both have shared a screen at the sequence ending where Peridia is revealed right before the black and white credits since the first episode. Amanda Serino worked on 17 episodes of The Mandalorian and all 7 episodes of The Book of Boba Fett, according to her IMDb page, and she worked on The Jungle Book, which was with, I think it's the Jon Favreau version, I'm not sure though, and then a couple of the new Planet of the Apes movies and one of the new Godzilla movies, and that's why I've got some pause there, because I know Andy Serkis was also doing a Jungle Book movie, and he was involved with the Planet of the Apes, so maybe it's not. Josh Roth also worked on The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett, and his past credits in Property Master realm include Venom, Hotel Artemis, one of the new Jumanji movies, and Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Okay, let's talk cast.
What's your name, son?
Ahsoka Tano is played in live action by Rosario Dawson.
You look the same.
You look old.
Well, that happens.
Yes, of course I'm speaking of the old version of the character.
You got old.
Had to happen sometime, Rex.
Natasha Lou Bordizzo plays Sabine Wren. We do not see her this episode, but we do hear her voice in the episode, and I guess that's enough to keep her in the credits. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is New Republic General and Ace Pilot Hera Syndulla. We do get to see and hear her often in this episode. Ray Stevenson is Baylan Skoll. Heard, not seen. Still super interesting if you ask me. David Tennant, not seen, but heard, but because he's the voice for Hu Yang, both when he was in the animated form in the Clone Wars and here in the live-action version as the droid. Evan Witten plays Jason Syndulla, who has abilities.
Jason has abilities. His father, Kanan Jarrus, was a Jedi.
Yes, we hear Hu Yang confirmed for live action. He knows the Force, and he's the son of Kanan Jarrus and Hera. Genevieve O'Reilly makes an appearance in holo projection form. Mon Mothma does not appear to be unable to help Hera, but rather unwilling. And so, her ineffective rule as the head of the New Republic is not due to her weakness. It's her naive wish for peace in the same corrupt body of politicians that she was part of before she had to go into hiding. Maybe I'm reading into things? I'll tell you who I wanted to see a lot more of in the episode. I wanted more scenes with Ariana Greenblatt. She played a young Gamora in the Avengers Infinity War movie. Now, she's got another solid Comic-Con appearance in her pocket after her role here in Part 5 as young Ahsoka. It's the Clone Wars era versions voiced by Ashley Eckstein in the animated series, but wow. These scenes with Ariana on Ryloth and Mandalore, probably hiding a lot of secrets, but man, she did a really good job, and I just couldn't pull my eyes off the screen, and I wanted to see more of it. Last, but definitely not least, is a digitally altered Hayden Christensen, but I'm not mentioning that computer wizardry as a negative. No, no. Seeing those flashes of Vader, Anakin's intensity without the cover of the suit, and seeing his practiced hand at lightsaber combat early in the episode almost made me want to stop playing that line about his least favorite thing about the beach. And you know what? I won't play it here. We've got a short hair early Clone Wars Anakin, a long-haired, almost Revenge of the Sith Anakin, Vader as he might have looked with most of his body parts and without needing the suit. The transitions were good too.
You lack conviction.
Back again from The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett, and last episode of Ahsoka is Captain Carson Teva.
I need you to send us a ping.
Paul Sun Hyung Lee does a great job, and Teva actually grounds the scenes that he was in, at least according to me. I mean, I may be biased, but the dialogue and the bureaucracy of the New Republic felt more believable when he was there. Maybe it wasn't him, but I'm going to give him credit.
One does not speak unless one knows.
Joining him as X-Wing pilot survivors of Hera's Phoenix Squadron are Lieutenant Gensu, played by Sabine stunt double Chow Nomova, and Lieutenant Lander, played by Din Djarin stand-in Brendan Wayne. Even though we only saw two ships collide last episode, only two X-Wings were in formation at the end of last episode, I thought it was Gensu and Teva and that was it, but Lander must have recovered control and then rejoined the squadron later. So I'm pretty sure this means Lieutenants Mawat and Basie were casualties. Captain Gerard of the New Republic frigate is played by Aiesa Davis, and if this is a Legends figure or one from a recent novel, I don't know. But a late look at Wikipedia seems to indicate this is a new character. The New Republic weapons officer on Gerard's ship was Gina Vittori. The comms officer on board was Anthony Notarile. Neither Vittori or Notarile seemed to have prior Star Wars work on their resumes, and I checked, and I didn't find any Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on either resume either. Did you catch Captain and Commander Rex in the World Between World scenes with young Ahsoka? Temuera Morrison voiced the clone troopers in the episode. Now, it might have been neat to hear a couple troopers chattering and one of them be Dee Bradley Baker, who does the voices in the Clone Wars and the Rebels for all the clones, and the Bad Batch, by the way. But it does make sense for consistency's sake that all clone troopers as clones of Jango Fett would sound like Temuera Morrison, who played Jango Fett in Attack of the Clones. Michelle Lee is still the stunt double for adult Ahsoka, but Rissa Kalar handled stunts for Padawan Ahsoka, Ariana Greenblatt, and Matt Mullins was the stunt double for Anakin. Ryan Ryusaki handled performance capture for the clone troopers. Derek Diaz handled mocap for the Ishi-Tib officer that stands beside Captain Gerard. And Tom O'Connell is listed as the performance artist for Darth Vader. He was one of three actors that played Vader in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series.
He can go about his business.
You can go about your business.
Move along.
Move along. Move along.
Disney Snap, previously on Lucasfilm Limited logo, Star Wars helmet sequence, and soft, ethereal music is playing as we come back to the Forest of Setas, or Setas, as Ahsoka says late in the episode. We see several shots. Nobody's there. After the forest, we're shown the henge. There's that shot that focuses first on the four-column locus where the map sat as the calculations were being taken. Well, it didn't sit. Kind of floated above it. The shot pans down to show us the sphere, neatly cut in two, which to me doesn't make a lot of sense. It was way too clean cut to be completely useless, maybe not as a map. Surely it could have been ancient technology given to somebody who could study it by someone, you know. I mean, it's not going to help you find Ezra and Sabine and Thrawn, but finding a path to another galaxy does seem like a worthy pursuit to me. Hera has landed her ship, the Ghost, near the Circle of Stones, and she comes out, blaster pistol drawn. She's not sure what's waiting for her, and I'm guessing it's because she probably reads a droid nearby, but she's not sure that it's Hu Yang because the T6 is not nearby. Jason wants to come out, take a look. Hera lets him and Chopper exit, but I feel like if she was careful enough to come out with a blaster, she'd have made him wait until there was an all clear. Well, the story absolutely needs him to come out, but the timing's off. Hera finds Hu Yang at the cliff edge. He's so despondent at not being able to find Sabine or Ahsoka. He's holding Sabine's helmet. I really thought, though, that he was just going to dive or let himself fall off the cliff. His words are simple, but while he's holding that helmet of Sabine as he speaks, I think he's specifically talking about Ahsoka and Sabine at first, and then maybe he's speaking about all Jedi as well.
Hu Yang?
I told them to stay together, but they never listen. They never listen.
Sad face Hu Yang leads us into the Ahsoka title card, and part 5 is called Shadow Warrior. I did some Googling. Now, I don't know what this refers to. There was a Japanese samurai period drama in the 1980s called Shadow Warriors that featured Sonny Chiba as Hattori Hanzo. And if that sounds familiar, maybe you've seen Kill Bill Volumes 1 and 2 by Quentin Tarantino. He, Sonny Chiba, played the same character in that movie, and the wiki entry for the show said, the gag was, Sonny Chiba was playing Hattori Hanzo in the first season, and then descendants or relatives of that first season character in later seasons. And then also in Kill Bill. So what does that have to do with Star Wars? Well, Favreau and Filoni and George Lucas all loved things like spaghetti westerns and samurai films. On that same Google search page for Shadow Warrior Japanese, a term called Kagemusha comes up, or Kagemusha, Kagemusha. I read a little on that page about it, and it refers to some political decoy. I mean, we do see that in the prequels with Padme and her handmaiden who dies in Attack of the Clones, but It's the Google listing on the right side of the page that I Googled that really caught my eye. Kagemusha is a 1980 war drama written and directed by Akira Kurosawa. He, of Rashomon, Seven Samurai, and Hidden Fortress fame, and an enormous influence on George Lucas.
I didn't really experience foreign films until I found my way into film school. At that point is when I was actually exposed to Kurosawa. And after the first one, the first one I saw was Seven Samurai, and after that I was completely hooked. I said, this is really good. It's hard to really appreciate the true genius of Kurosawa, I think, until you've seen a few of the films, and then you've been able to see other films at the same time and be able to realize his visual style.
It is no accident, folks, right? That is not an accident. It's not even a happy coincidence. After the title card, we join Sky Guy and Snips in the World Between Worlds. We aren't told that that is where they are, but it's absolutely clear that's where they are. How did Ahsoka get here? Well, she's not even sure. Anakin tells her, she lost a fight. At first, she doesn't seem to remember, but then she recalls Baylan Skoll. Anakin does not reveal how he knew Baylan Skoll, or if he remembers meeting him like Skoll seemed to indicate to Ahsoka last episode, but it is good that she remembers something.
So you do remember. That's good.
Why?
It means you still have a chance.
A chance?
To live.
Ahsoka's still a little confused. Anakin indicates he is there to finish her training, something she isn't shy about admitting never got to happen in the real world. She left him before undergoing any official Jedi trial, but this place, this moment's pretty much going to function that way. So what is the trial going to be? Lifting rocks? Force triple jumps? Force lightning? She never got to finish her lightsaber battle with Vader on Malachor. So Anakin ignites a blue lightsaber blade, and it seems like it will be their own duel of the fates.
To learn, Snips.
All right. What's the lesson, Master?
Live or die.
I won't fight you.
I've heard that before.
Obi-Wan has taught you well.
I will not fight you, Father.
I won't fight you.
If you will not fight, then you will meet your destiny.
That is 100% a reference to Return of the Jedi. I do not have any doubt. If this manifestation of Anakin knows about that line, it's safe to say this is complete Anakin. Notice, however, he does have a missing hand thanks to Count Dooku. I take that to mean Anakin wasn't truly a Jedi until after losing his hand, but even though he died with the suit on, helmet off, I think redemption wasn't fixing himself in a moment in time. The lightsaber clashing is mixed in with the waves on Cetus, and for very good reason. Jason staring out at the water, the waves, and we'll get back to him in a moment. Hera is scanning for life forms with a device that kind of looks like the one that Han used on Hoth to try and find Luke at the beginning of The Empire Strikes Back. The antennae are a little shorter, so I don't know if it's supposed to be, maybe it's a newer model, or maybe it's just a different device, or maybe Han was, extending the antenna a little bit further to get more range. I don't know. Hu Yang is having no luck figuring out the halved map sphere. It's broken beyond repair. It is a little clean for a lightsaber plunge right in the middle of it, but they've got no hope of following. That's the gist. Honestly, again, just wait near Cetusk. They're coming back. I mentioned that last podcast. This is like a tunnel with only two sides here. It literally is, right? A hyperspace tunnel. The calculations are from point A to point B. No stops in between. Hu Yang and Hera muse about where their friends could be. And it's either on that ship or dead, right? What's lacking now is a little hope.
We're overdue at HQ. Senator Organa says she can only give us cover for so long.
A little hope? Senator Leia Organa! Yeah, Leia gets name dropped. We don't need to hear all about her background in the Senate before The Force Awakens from any novel or anything like that. It's not important. It's just enough to get her name here. And that she's looking out for people like Hera and Carson, who are doggedly pursuing Imperial remnants. Leia, of course, is going to one day form the Resistance and lead them against the First Order. We're still a few years away from that. Jason, still watching those waves. He is calm, collected. He's not in a panic searching for his friends. So he hears something from the water. But it's not just the water. Hera's trying to justify herself to Carson, buy some time, but her son calls her over. Now, she's reluctant at first, but I think she knows her son has his father's talent. So she submits to his request, which is kind of against trope. Usually it's like, oh no, nobody pays attention to the kid. Here she's kind of listening.
What are we listening for?
Don't you hear it?
The waves crashing?
No. The lightsabers.
The sound editors do a good job here. I do have a problem with this low rumble that they love to throw under all of the audio and the music. It is a great job, though. They gradually pull up the lightsabers for us, the listeners. Kevin Kiner beautifully lays the Force theme in there as well. So how can Hera hear this? I think it's because she's the mother of a Force-sensitive child. Not because she's actually hearing it herself necessarily, but, you know, I don't think it's because she's trained in the Force or is somehow closer to it here. Leia sensed her mother in the womb, and then she sensed Ben in her womb. I think there was a novel that mentioned something about that, but I think it's simply that Hera and Jason have this connection. She's not well-trained, but she does trust the Force because of Kanan. Her husband talked about it with her. She was around Ezra and Ahsoka as well. She's much more open than Sabine is. And I think Jason can help her hear what he hears. Well, that's enough for her to call Carson back into action. He's confused. They've already swept the surface.
What am I missing? What just happened?
Jason has abilities. His father, Kanan Jarrus, was a Jedi.
Okay.
That was a laugh-out-loud moment for me, seeing Paul Sun-Hyung Lee deliver that line. And I really wanted to kind of put in the line from Spaceballs about combing the desert, but, it was funny. He accepts there's the Force. I mean, he's heard of it. He uses "May the Force be with you," that line, I think, to Din Djarin. He's not familiar with it, but he's been around long enough to know you don't ask questions when it comes to Force users. I did catch that he asked Lander to get everyone moving, but there was only him, Lander, and Gensu, right? So there's only three X-Wings in that first scene of the episode flying by the rocks, and then the ghost as well. But I didn't realize that more than Teva and Jensen survived that close call with the Eye of Sion until he said Lander's name.
Looks like you don't have much left to offer.
I haven't taught you everything yet.
Meanwhile, in the world between worlds, Anakin and Ahsoka have been dueling, and that's what Jason was hearing, right? The little we see when we return to them is terrific. Anakin looks powerful, very practiced. Ahsoka clearly is remembering the things she's been taught. Maybe she's picked up a move or two since they last trained together. Anakin's got long hair here, and I personally think maybe they should have foreshadowed the reveal that comes later in the episode with his outfit morphing into different versions. Maybe show him using different forms and choreography that we saw in previous movies and show episodes. Those would have been cool Easter eggs. For example, wouldn't you have just loved if he had the Vader suit on, but helmet off? Maybe he was wheezing a little and huffing and puffing, trying to wield the saber against her, And then, you know, maybe that evokes some pity from her. And then she lets down her defenses. And then he knocks her into a long ago memory. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. He destroys the walkway that she's on. And she goes falling. She seems to be floating in a purple cloud or something like that. And I thought at first, my first impression was, hey, she's in Cloud City. Maybe she's going to come across Luke's hand. I know. But that's what I first thought. The haze clears just enough to see Ahsoka getting up from the ground. Then a stormtrooper comes running past. No. It's a clone trooper. A phase one trooper. So I'm thinking, are we going to meet Rex? Well, in a way, but not yet. I'm still thinking, hey, Rosario Dawson, get up. Clone troopers are running past us, or running past Ahsoka toward us. Explosions are happening. We're seeing the flashes. A lightsaber ignites. We hear Anakin's voice.
Come on. Forward!
Master!
Hurry up, Snips!
Wait!
My eyes went real wide when young Ahsoka first appears on that screen. So I was watching the episode, and so I came to when Anakin destroys the path under Ahsoka. She starts falling. Then my wife came into the room and said, you're watching without me? So I was, yeah, I was. But I restarted the episode, and I rewatched everything up to that point. I didn't mind at all. I didn't know what I was about to see. All I saw was her falling through the purple clouds. The whole time I'm watching, I'm thinking, okay, so we're going to find out she's falling through the clouds on Bespin, and then we don't. I mean, we get this reveal. It was shocking to me, and I was totally on board. Immediately, I was like, I got to find out who this girl is. I think I said, well, this girl is set for life at Comic-Cons, and it turns out it's Ariana Greenblatt, who was in Avengers Infinity War as young Gamora, and she just had a part in the Barbie movie that was crazy wildly successful. So, yeah, I think she's already set. This role, and maybe it's just icing on the cake for her, or maybe this will be the biggest thing yet. In my opinion, yeah, Star Wars fits that bill. There was a troop transport in the background. I think one of the landers that was used in the Attack of the Clones is in the background as well. You know, it was the one that Yoda rode in and said,
around the survivors and perimeter create.
Man, I could watch those scenes over and over again. I have problems with the episode, but not those scenes. Imagine if you get one more chance to talk with someone who meant so much to you. Someone who taught you just about everything you know about surviving in battle. Now, maybe you didn't want to learn those lessons, but you did. Either because you had to, or maybe you didn't even realize you were being taught. Now, years later, you're not just remembering this. You're experiencing a memory as though you were really there.
This is the Clone Wars!
Yeah, no kidding!
This was one of our first missions. Why are we here?
You tell me!
I don't understand!
That's your problem!
Master! Wait!
Ahsoka didn't speak those lines in that mission on Ryloth. She didn't have the context because she's not reliving the battle here. She's not following in every footstep.
Gotta keep up!
What about my training?
This is your training!
It's real tempting to just play the entire scene, but I'm going to have to deal with copyright strikes if that's the case. I mean, even without the visuals. The purple haze gives way to a yellow one. There's this break in the fighting, and we see a Twi'lek in the background and a medical droid. If this is one of their first missions, they are on Ryloth during Season 1 of the Clone Wars animated series. Episodes 19 through 21 concern that planet. It's number 19 that's called Storm Over Ryloth, that most closely resembles the dialogue and situations, even if the action for Anakin and Ahsoka on the planet comes later in the arc. So they're in orbit and fighting a space battle in episode 19, but all right, so Ryloth is Hera's home planet. Twi'leks live there. It's visited several times in animation during the Clone Wars and Rebels. Hera's father is Cham Syndulla, or Cam Syndulla, a liberator of the planet, something of a rebel himself. We probably don't see him there with Anakin and Ahsoka in the World Between Worlds. I think he's red-skinned. But there are several Twi'lek mercenaries among the clone troopers. Again, the Clone Wars show never shows us this part of the mission for Anakin and Ahsoka. We see them in space and on a starship. But even though the dialogue closely resembles some that we do see after that orbital battle, Ahsoka leads an assault on a droid control ship and things go wrong in the first episode of that animated arc. You know, they have to open up a blockade over the planet maintained by battle droids that are under the command of the Techno Union. And Ahsoka directly disobeys orders several times in what's probably one of her first chances at command.
Commander, we've been caught in a trap.
You're overreacting, Admiral. I can get us through. Blue Squadron, stay the course.
I'm ordering you to return to the ship. We're going to need your help.
Ahsoka, it's too risky.
So those voices are Anakin and Admiral Yularen, who we saw in live action in the Andor series at the ISB offices. They're not happy with Ahsoka.
Did you train her not to follow orders?
Axe, are you still there? Come on, boys, stay in formation.
Got two in my tail. I can't shake them. I can't help you, Axe. I've got my own problems.
That clone trooper Axe does not make it back. Several of the pilots under her command meet a similar fate, all because she probably wasn't prepared for command.
Ahsoka, we are in trouble. I order you back here.
All right, all right. Let's go, squad. Pull back to the command ship.
Why are we retreating?
We're not retreating. We're following orders.
To be fair, Anakin absolutely did not prepare this little girl for command. It's something we can fully realize better because now, in live action, we see how young Ahsoka was. It's much more obvious than it was represented in animation. And then you have a grown woman providing that voice.
Ahsoka, I am very disappointed in you. You not only disobeyed the Admiral, you disobeyed me.
I thought I could knock out those battleships so when Master Obi-Wan arrived, he could get through.
I know you meant well, Snips. But there's a bigger picture that you're not aware of.
Okay, I know. So at the risk of this becoming a Clone Wars recap podcast, I think you can hear just how close her mental state is in this animated arc to the live-action one that we saw in this Shadow Warrior episode. Then, in her final training in the World Between Worlds, so many years later, it really shows you how there's this connection here. And yeah, it's not the same exact scenes, but maybe she experienced something like this later when they were fighting on the planet's surface, and it adds context for us here in the Ahsoka series.
First rule of war, listen and obey your superiors.
But sometimes you get carried away.
All that means is that I understand what you're going through.
But I failed.
It was a trap, Snips. It wasn't your fault.
I lost so many of my pilots.
Take heart, little one. That's the reality of command.
The Jedi were kind of terrible. I mean, were even adult Jedi ready for the horrors of this war? How did they let themselves get pulled into it? It's kind of dumb when we look back on it, right? Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, children certainly weren't ready for the horrors of war. I don't know why they gave them Padawans and let their Padawans go into battle with them. I mean, it just does not make sense.
Admiral, I am so sorry. They're all gone.
So Ashley Eckstein is reading that in a booth in while she's recording for the Clone Wars. But Ahsoka, in animated form, she's holding the hand of Admiral Yularen while he's bandaged up there. So that's an eerie echo when Ahsoka holds the hand of that Reg in live action, and then he grasps her hand. Before that scene in the Clone Wars ends, though, Ahsoka ends up talking back to her master.
I talked to Master Windu. We are to proceed with our attack on the blockade.
What? We can't.
Ahsoka, we have to break that blockade. The Twi'leks on Ryloth are depending on us.
I understand that, Master, but we've lost so many men.
Don't worry, Ahsoka.
No! That's what you said last time, and now everyone's gone. My whole squadron.
Ahsoka.
So again, the animated show indicates there were discussions aboard the Republic capital ships and not on the surface. But there is a door that is left open just enough for another similar conversation to take place on the surface. And it could just be that Ahsoka, remembering her past, maybe she's conflating events or misremembering them as an unreliable narrator. This world between worlds, though, is not just in her mind. She's not teaching herself these lessons or having Anakin deliver a line using information that only he could have known. The acting also indicates she's experiencing the past, even if that's not how we've seen the world between worlds work when it was in animated form. Ahsoka and Anakin have moved forward with the rushing troopers into the purple fog of war. We never saw that in the Clone Wars. The haze turns yellow. Ahsoka emerges from that cloudy past at that MASH unit or the field hospital. She sees those clone troopers on stretchers. There are Twi'lek rebels nearby. Medical droid, just like the one we saw treating that bandaged Jalaren in the Clone Wars series. And again, Ahsoka doesn't view the troopers as expendable. She cares. It's why her recklessness early on cost her so much emotionally. She's just a kid. And she was thrown into command because she had abilities. So what is it that she has to learn here that she didn't learn before? Is it that she is right and all life is precious?
Come on, Snips. The battle's not over yet. There are more Separatist droids approaching. Is there a problem?
We lost so many.
There's always a price to be paid.
It was my fault. They were following my orders. I got them killed.
Come here. This is war, Ahsoka. As Jedi, it's our job to lead. That doesn't mean we don't make mistakes.
But our mistakes cost lives. That doesn't bother you?
Of course it does.
This isn't what I trained for.
You must adjust to the times.
I really, really don't think that's the lesson here. I mean, she was already taught this on multiple occasions, not just in that Ryloth arc. She's young. She cares. There's a price to be paid for leading, says her master. She didn't want to be part of the war. She went through her training to be a keeper of the peace like Obi-Wan and Anakin. Times are different now. She doesn't like it. I don't think there is a wrong or right answer here. When you're young, you might not want to fight every battle. And then as you get older, you see what happens when you just choose not to fight in those moments. Anakin and the other Jedi who interacted with Ahsoka during her life tried to point out something that Spider-Man's Uncle Ben laid out for us in a different property.
This guy, Flash Thompson, he probably deserved what happened. But just because you can beat him up doesn't give you the right to. Remember, with great power comes great responsibility.
Quit worrying about me, okay? Something's different. I'll figure it out. Stop lecturing me, please.
I don't mean to lecture and I don't mean to preach. And I know I'm not your father.
Then stop pretending to be.
Peter wasn't Uncle Ben's child, and Ahsoka isn't Anakin's child, but he will only meet his son at the end of his life. He didn't get to train him. Ahsoka is mad when Anakin brings in some gallows humor, suggests, hey, you know, you shouldn't want an apprentice or a Padawan of your own. Ahsoka does not yet understand the lesson. She knows I'm here to learn, but she doesn't know what the lesson is. She still thinks it has to do with some choice that she already made in her past. She doesn't yet realize it has to do with all choices moving forward.
Is that all I'll have to teach my own Padawan one day? How to fight?
Listen, I'm teaching you how to lead, how to survive. And to do that, you're going to have to fight.
What if I want to stop fighting?
Then you'll die.
She was basically a spoiled brat. Her nickname was Snips because she was snippy with Skywalker, Sky Guy, as she called him. Anakin, in these Ryloth scenes, is wearing a hairstyle and outfit that matches those animated scenes from the Ryloth arc in the Clone Wars. Ahsoka is wearing her Padawan beads and a headband to match as well. So what's different? Well, Anakin runs off into battle, and this time around, Ahsoka sees a glimpse of what Anakin would become. She could not possibly have seen that back then. Explosions flash. We see the visage of Vader for just a moment, and young Ahsoka stands in shock at what she's realizing about how she grew up the way she did.
Some general I am. Maybe those senators were right. They got us out here chasing ghosts.
You do things your way because you care. This is why people like you.
From Ahsoka on Ryloth in The World Between Worlds, we were brought back to Cetos with Jacen still looking out on the waves, Hera and Huyang still searching for their friends. Hera's cockpit does indeed have a picture that we can only assume is Kanan. But again, why in Star Wars do we have a paper picture? I mean, I get the reference, but we don't need it if it's anachronistic. It's almost as if Filoni was hoping that we would never notice it, and then someone years from now would hit on it, or maybe he says, oh, nobody caught the Easter egg that we said. Except people noticed it right away. Hera, as a general, knows the lessons that we saw Anakin teaching Ahsoka. The difference is that Hera isn't giving up. She accepted the mantle of responsibility much more readily. Most Twi'lek tended to be those in service in other parts of the Star Wars galaxy. I mean, think about this. You had Madame Garza Fwip in the Book of Boba Fett, and then she had a male and female servant with her as well. Jabba's dancer Ula, and then his lieutenant Bib Fortuna. Twi'lek, except for her father, Cam Syndulla, didn't tend to be leaders. Hera's not in just a position of power here. She wields it responsibly, as viewers of Rebels can attest. She tends to listen at the right time, make good decisions, ask the right questions.
Yang, where are they? People don't just vanish into thin air.
Well, no. Normally, no.
So maybe that was a meta joke? I mean, we know Obi-Wan, Yoda, and as much as it pains me to say, Luke, Leia, and Ben Solo all vanish. I mean, it's kind of like a Jedi trope, but maybe it's just this special Force family that has these things, the Force legacy, so to speak.
Yeah, she is tenacious.
So was her master.
Yeah? What was he like?
Intense.
So Hera knows it was a he. Probably heard a couple stories from Ahsoka, but she's asking here, I think, more about character or demeanor. Huyang may not have known about Anakin being Vader, but it's probably safe to assume that either Huyang accompanied Ahsoka to meet Luke on at least one occasion, or since Ahsoka figured out on her own eventually, maybe she told him, or maybe Huyang deduced it. For me, the humor comes from the downplaying that a droid does to a war hero general.
Nice work, Commander. We'll secure the perimeter. Come on, let's go!
And then we're back in the World Between Worlds. We see Ahsoka has her Anakin-gifted lightsabers that she received from him the very last time they spoke face-to-face before Order 66 and before the Siege of Mandalore. The episode was Season 7, Episode 9 of The Clone Wars. So it was called Old Friends, Not Forgotten.
Thanks for the support, as always.
That's what friends are for. If you're going to face Maul, you'll need these.
Friends. Huh? I mean, it seems like Filoni in The Clone Wars indicates they're parting as equals, no longer master and apprentice. That was different from her leaving the Jedi Order in Season 5, Episode 20.
The Jedi Order is your life. You can't just throw it away like this. Ahsoka, you are making a mistake.
Maybe. But I have to sort this out on my own. Without the Council. And without you.
I understand. More than you realize, I understand wanting to walk away from the Order.
I know.
I mean, usually that takes a romantic tone in Star Wars. I mean, I love you, I know. But this is the love that two people share when they've been through war together. They've always looked out for each other. In that final Season 7 meeting, Anakin gave her those repaired and upgraded lightsabers, the ones that she carries during the Siege of Mandalore. She's going to drop them just a short time later after the crash of the flagship Tribunal that takes place in the final episode of The Clone Wars, Season 7, Episode 12's Victory and Death. Ahsoka drops them amid a graveyard of 332nd Company clone troopers that perished in a crash where Darth Maul and Ahsoka escape Order 66 during that crash of that flagship. And then Vader will find the graves and the lightsabers sometime later.
I don't know this battle.
This was the Siege of Mandalore. We had parted ways by now.
Looks intense.
It was.
You did well. You're a warrior now, as I trained you to be.
Now, there's a word we heard earlier, intense. Anakin not remembering this battle makes sense. He would have been on Coruscant getting ready to save Palpatine from Mace Windu. I don't think this means it's in Ahsoka's head. But it might indicate whatever representation of Anakin it is we're seeing and she's speaking with is not omnipotent or one with the Force. This representation seems proud of how powerful Ahsoka has become. He calls her a warrior and speaks to her about his legacy. There's that pride again. He never met Leia. He only briefly met his son. He spent years training Ahsoka. And Ahsoka knows the end of the story. He tells her that she's more than just what he taught, but she's the sum of the knowledge of a line of masters that Hu Yang, remember, called untraditional.
We're part of a legacy.
But my part of that legacy is one of death and war.
But you're more than that. Because I'm more than that.
Sounds selfish. Sounds prideful. It is, of course. Maybe Ahsoka picks up on that.
You are more, Anakin. But more powerful and dangerous than anyone realized.
Is that what this is about?
If I am everything you are...
You've learned nothing.
Don't say that.
Back to the beginning.
I am not shy about picking on the writing. I mean, when it's bad, I tell you. But this is pretty good in my book. Ahsoka touches a nerve. She's getting close. So Anakin, or this representation of him, has to increase the difficulty level to make sure she's not just backing into a correct answer. He basically says, back to square one. She tries to backtrack and course correct, but Anakin pulls his lightsaber from his belt. Well, not Anakin's.
I gave you a choice. Live or die.
No.
Incorrect.
Her only response was no. And he tells her, you know, that's incorrect. You can't say no. But I think what would have been better would have been for him to say, now, young Ahsoka, you will die.
Now, young Skywalker, you will die.
You know, the whole poetry, it rhymes thing. Ahsoka must defend herself against brutal strikes from Vader. But this is a Vader more powerful than one that was hampered by the suit. This is an even more powerful version, one with sallow skin, yellowed or even red eyes of a Sith Lord. Remember, he's still only got one natural hand because of Dooku at the very outset of the Clone Wars, but he's more agile since this imagines that he didn't challenge the high ground and lose his legs and his last arm from grasping scorching hot rocks. His lungs haven't breathed in poisonous lava fumes. His skin hasn't caught fire on the slopes of a lava plain on Mustafar. This is frightening. He's not just able to overpower young Ahsoka, he's dodging her as well, something that she will have to do in a moment. Then he force kicks her through the smoke back into the world between worlds waiting room, and he pursues. As he comes through that fog onto the walkway, it's not Rogue One hallway, but we hear Vader's breath. We see Anakin flash between Vader's visage and Anakin's. It's pretty chilling.
You lack conviction.
Palpatine said Luke would pay the price for his lack of vision as he jetted Force Lightning at him in Return of the Jedi. There's no such danger here. Just the full might of Vader against a much older Ahsoka now. You know, she's aged back to her Rosario Dawson self. She cannot match his might. But submitting is also kind of off the table. This is not Luke trying to reach a father. This is a Padawan that must prove to her master that she's learned the lesson that he is teaching her. He's got the upper hand when she's disarmed, but she dodges his swings and gains control of his saber. She at first holds it at neck level, and then she seems to press in closer in anger. And as she does, her eyes seem to flash yellow from the reflected red beam. Anakin's eyes, they're like yellow and red and crazy looking. She switches off his saber and tosses it away. She's not choosing to behead her enemy. She will pass this test, like Luke, and instead of death and destruction paving the way for life, as Baylan Skoll put it, she's choosing just the opposite. She chooses to live.
I choose to live.
There's hope for you yet.
Truly inspiring cinematic choices here, with the framing over the shoulder mirroring the Part 4 introduction of Anakin as he disappears from the shot. Some lightning pealing thunder to distract Ahsoka long enough for the transition to begin. We don't know how she got here, but we see how she returns. Our vantage point of the world between worlds shifts so that multiple pathways become one. The starry background falls like rain or water droplets into a blackened pool, comes up from her feet, in an echo of how we saw into the world last episode. We transition from waves to the wavy blue pathway in the world between worlds. Now we can see dark waters rise and overtake Ahsoka's head. But she's not panicking. She's calm. She's kind of expecting it in a way. The screen then goes black and we fade in. And she's in this cross-like pose. I mean, they just can't help themselves, right? Floating in the water. No damage from falling on the rocks below the hen. She's only been in this water for a few moments. And help arrives. Lieutenant Gensu is the one that dives in to retrieve Ahsoka from her baptism in the waters of Seatas. Carson Teva's squad pulls her out of the water, just as she seemed a little confused when she got to the world between worlds. She groggily calls for her master now that she's back on Seatas. It seems that the rescue mission took place at night, and perhaps it's the next day that light starts to break on a cloudy planet as Ahsoka wakes in her bunk on the T6. She just had that dip in the water, and now a beam of sunlight is shining on her. Not very subtle imagery. I don't think it has to be, though. I mean, too much would have been the daughter's owl, the Morai, flying in the sky, evoking a dove or a voice calling out in the moment or something like that. That'd have been a little bit too much. Ahsoka is going to thank Jason when he asks, who were you fighting with lightsabers? Hera goes for the old distraction parenting technique. You know, hey, go aboard the Jedi starship. This one's different. It's got lightsabers and Jedi training equipment. Those in the know recognize the humor in Jason asking Hu Yang if he knows how to build a lightsaber, because he was the lightsaber building droid in the Clone Wars. I got a big question, though.
I know you've just recovered, but I have to ask. Where's Sabine?
No. Not where Sabine. Why isn't Jason learning how to use the Force from Ahsoka? This isn't post-Luke's school fall. This isn't even a dark side-leaning Grogu with attachments case. I'm not willing to consider that Hera forbade it. She was in love with a Jedi. Why isn't Auntie Ahsoka teaching Jason? Why is Sabine the one with no talent, the one she wants to teach? And so help me if the reason is girl power.
The last time I saw Sabine, she was holding this.
And that's significant?
She might have left an impression on it. Like a memory.
So we'll know what happened.
Possibly.
So I decided to do a little research, since this is at least the second time they've shown Ahsoka using this Force Echo power. Apparently, I'm a little late to sharing this information. Other YouTubers and podcasters focused on it already, but this isn't the first time we've seen it in live action, Rey couldn't control that power. It was much more vivid for her in The Force Awakens. Then again, Lucasfilm decided to make Rey one of the most crazy, powerful Force users ever. I don't think Ahsoka ever used this power before that I can find, either in the Clone Wars series or in Rebels, but we do see it in the Clone Wars series. I think that was the first time it was ever shown. Quinlan Vos uses it like Ahsoka does here in the show, in that he can control it, use it on demand. He did it in the Hunt for Zero episode. It's either called psychometry or Force Echo, which I like a lot more as a term, so that's what I'm going to go with. Ahsoka reaches out, and like we saw in the second episode, we hear voices. Those of Ahsoka, Sabine, and Baylan Skoll. The awful truth is revealed to Ahsoka. Sabine went willingly on the Eye of Sion.
Then she's alive. Yes. At least she was when she left Satos.
Satos? I mean, I guess for a lesser-known planet, people might not have a uniform pronunciation in Basic. But other than the trees, the Purgle, and the Henge, this planet seems devoid of life. Is there no civilization here in this part of the Denam system? Captain Teva comes to fetch Hera for a holocall with Chancellor Mon Mothma.
General, we have a problem.
What else?
It's a fleet. They're on their way.
Well, they're a little late.
I don't think they're coming to help.
Before the scene cuts to that conference call, Ahsoka is going to look to the skies and see the Purgle and have her plan for finding Sabine and Ezra. This means Hera's going into the call without that plan. Not that it would have helped. Mon Mothma is not as helpful this time around as she was on Home One's conference call. I'll remind everyone. They had Morgan Elsbeth and the New Republic knows that they have... I mean, they have recorded evidence that two lightsaber-wielding Force users attacked and scuttled a large flagship of the New Republic. They killed most, if not all, of the crew, specifically to free Elsbeth. Then, a general was almost murdered at a shipyard on Corellia in order to hide evidence that already existed of Imperial remnant cooperation. There was evidence of theft. Corruption. I'm not suggesting that there aren't people working behind the scenes that are putting their fingers on the scales, you know, telling lies, fudging things a little bit. I am saying, though, that Dave Filoni needs to include those scenes. If you can't, I'll speak more on this after we get through the episode, but it's bad. Mothma orders Hera to return to Coruscant and face an inquiry. Just like in real life, I guess, a Senate Oversight Committee with absolute no concept of what the real world is like is going to threaten and bully to get its way.
You are going to need her testimony to help you. I'm sorry.
Sorry for the This Is The Way podcast political hour here, but there you have it. The senators don't want you to do the job you're doing. They don't care how much evidence you have, so come here or else. And yeah, bring Ahsoka too. That's when Ahsoka comes in and reveals her plan to follow Sabine. Star Whales. Same way Ezra went. Can they take her? Ahsoka's not sure. Is it safe? No, not sure. I think it's a good thing Filoni writes Hu Yang and Hera voicing hesitancy at the plan. But I also think it's reasonable that when you're up against the wall, you're going to take a risk. The urgency of the fleet arriving and the Eye of Sion leaving less than a day ago makes this move plausible. I don't mind the design of the Purgle. Having seen them in animation first, I know what to expect. But seeing the pod of Purgle does make me think there was some creativity lacking. I mean, my dad said, it's not much more than sticking a whale head on a squid body. So, what do they need to do here? Well, Ezra's Jedi thing was he was good at connecting with nature, with animal life. It seems like every Jedi has something they're innately more attuned with through the Force. And what is Ahsoka's? I don't really know. I mean, it's not that psychometry Force Echo thing. Perhaps she's just more open to the concept. You know, an openness, they've all said, is usually the limiting factor. Like, if you're not very open, then you can't use the Force the way you want it, rather than just letting it guide your destiny. you know, the Sith, they warp and use it for unnatural means. And usually, not always, Jedi are more like, you know, go with the flow. They're kind of hippie. Ezra spoke through the Force with the creatures, and the ones that took him and Thrawn through space did so using their tentacles. It seems like this time there's a different idea in Ahsoka's mind.
Up ahead, I think that is one of the larger ones.
That's what she said?
Yeah. That'll do.
That's what she said. That's what she said. That's what she said.
I couldn't help myself. I'm sorry. Ahsoka is going to go out on the wing again. This time, no suit. She's not in space, though. She's getting as close as she can to make contact. Meanwhile, the fleet shows up in orbit. Hera asks Teva, hey, please run some interference. I appreciated the dialogue, given that he's trying to delay this fleet captain, and then she's not having this insubordinate tone. But Teva caves pretty rapidly, whereas, you know, if he was just honest from the beginning instead of just at the end, I think it would have worked out too. I mean, it seems like it would have worked at the outset. Certainly, you can try running some interference. It wasn't Poe in The Last Jedi bad. Yeah, that pause there, that's where a clip would have gone if I recognized that that movie was part of the franchise. But I will never, because it does not fit.
That's what he said, right, guys?
It's just like the stories you told me. How the whales took Ezra and the bad guys far, far away.
Yeah, they saved us.
Now they'll take Ahsoka to where Ezra is?
That's the hope, kiddo.
I don't nearly have the same problem with animation. I mean, Jason is getting to see firsthand something that he could only consider a legend. He was born after the Battle of Lothal, before the destruction of the first Death Star, but he was really young. He was probably 5 years old at the Battle of Endor. Even using the Force, he'd have no real context for what happened. But now, he's getting to see it.
The crazy thing is, it's true. The Force, the Jedi, all of it. It's all true.
Hera instructs Hu Yang to pilot her T-6 into the baleen mouth of the portal. Does she know this will work? No, not really. Does she know where it will go?
We'll just see where it goes.
It could go anywhere.
I know. That's better than going nowhere.
That's their situation, and the one we, the viewers, are in as well. There's just 3 episodes left, and this is starting to feel like the season is just a big setup for a movie. I mean, there's still time, but it is running out. When you have an 8-episode season, I mean, is Filoni using this as a setup for his movie? The episode's going to close out with a Pearl heading from the atmosphere into space. If the fleet captain doesn't move, you know, there's complications. I mean, the Purrgil jumping to hyperspace is kind of like a ship, I guess. She's going to have to take evasive maneuvers. Hera's opinion of these Star Whales has evolved since her time with Ezra.
We could just get out of their way. We either run into them or the asteroids. Take your pick.
Try flying with them instead of against them.
That's not a half bad idea. Fine. I can't believe I'm doing this.
It's not the strangest thing we've ever done.
Yeah, that doesn't make me feel better.
The Purrgil are not unheard of in Star Wars, even though we've not seen them until animation and, you know, never in the original trilogy, never in the prequel trilogy. But these aren't myths and legends to the people that live in this universe. Maybe they've been misunderstood.
I never imagined there were creatures in deep space.
When I was young, I was told amazing stories of creatures that lived in the stars, traveled between the worlds. Old pilots said it was the Purrgil who inspired us to jump from system to system. But I don't believe it. The Purrgil are dangerous. They wander into hyperspace lanes, crash into ships. I've lost more than one friend that way.
So when Ezra jumps galaxies with Thrawn at the end of Rebels, his friends tried to plead with him, you know, get out before the Purrgil end up jumping. He stayed to the end to see the job done, make sure Thrawn couldn't escape. He told Hera, Sabine, Chopper, Rex, Zeb, and anyone listening there, that the Force would be with them always. It seems like Hera was remembering that at the close of this episode.
Ahsoka,
Looks like they're about to jump.
Sorry you can't make the trip.
No, it's all right. Jason's too young to travel between galaxies. Hera, I'll find them. I promise. May the Force be with you.
Okay, time for my thoughts. I had a nice discussion at a poker table Friday night with some people who know I like Star Wars and wanted to know what I thought about Ahsoka. There was somewhat of a consensus the show is moving way too slowly. I mean, is the action fun? Sure. But there's this tendency to take this short arc and make it last a whole season. Something that could get resolved in 1 to 3 episodes is now drawn out with long pauses, insignificant dialogue, you know, silly reveals. Generally, we're being left to an aesthetic of Star Wars without real substance. A writing team like the one on Breaking Bad, for example, would have gotten us to Thrawn and Ezra already, and then we would be talking about what's next. They wouldn't have dragged things out. I'm giving this team benefit of the doubt here. I mean, this team. It's Filoni. This episode, though, while it does have some great young Ahsoka scenes, those are not enough to overcome the last two, and those also weren't bad episodes. My parents, though, watched the first two with me a week or so after my birthday, and then just Friday, they got together with me to watch the three they haven't seen so far, including the Shadow Warrior episode, and watching them back to back like that, they were getting bored, and I can't blame them. They wanted to watch the show. It wasn't like I had to, you know, twist their arm or anything. This show really fails the binge watch challenge, though, in my opinion. It's so much more obvious, the dragging, the ineffective dialogue, plot holes, contrivances, bad writing. I mean, the first two episodes could have been one episode. The next two, 3 and 4, certainly could have been one. And then this third one was great. But I think you could have made it longer with Ahsoka backstory for those who don't follow everything. Brian at the poker table said he's one of those kinds of people. You know, I don't have time to watch the Clone Wars and Rebels and all those episodes. He didn't understand the world between world stuff. But he shouldn't have to watch 7 seasons of the Clone Wars and all the seasons of Rebels, 4 seasons of Rebels, to understand it. And if he watched those, like I did, he shouldn't have to then wonder, why is it not functioning the way I just saw in those shows? I've said it before, and I'll say it again here. Canon starts with the saga live-action movies, then there are other films like Rogue One and Solo, then live-action TV, then the Clone Wars movie, and then animated shows, and there are things lower down the line that may have come from Disney, but they just don't count like live action. You know, I'm sorry if your favorite thing is the High Republic book series. It is not important to Star Wars like The Force Awakens is. If a throwaway line on Rebels contradicts something that you loved in a Claudia Gray or Timothy Zahn novel, sorry, Rebels wins. If Dave Filoni says the world between worlds isn't time travel, it's because even in the show that he produced, Rebels, it's not how it works in this live-action show that he shows in the Ahsoka series. It's not how it works here. Is that frustrating? Absolutely.
Uh-oh. It's not good.
You know, I called out YouTuber Robothead after he made a post on X about Part 5. It seemed like he was just making fun of one of the actors. I didn't yell and scream. I just politely responded, I didn't agree with that post. Well, I watched his latest video, and I posted in that video's YouTube comments section that I agreed completely with his take on the writing. Disney is absolutely failing at bringing coherent stories to the Star Wars universe. I liked this episode, but I think the buck stops with the creative team because the finished products, they're mostly watchable, but I want it to be better and I want more. I don't think we should be expected to compromise and sit back and say, well, that's what we get or that's the best they can do. They're going to charge double for Disney Plus next year and they're putting out an ad-supported version. I think it's already out. I paid for Disney Plus for Star Wars and Marvel content and it's not all that great. It's not really getting better and there's not more of it. It's certainly not suddenly worth double. Disney Plus isn't worth what we're paying now, and unfortunately, it's kind of an all-or-nothing situation here. You don't get to make the rules. You either pay or you don't. This show is not bad. Ahsoka is not terrible. It's just not great. I don't hate Dave Filoni. I don't hate Star Wars. I love Star Wars. I think that, unfortunately, Tony Gilroy's team of writers for Andor set a bar for me that and the lore aspect of Ahsoka, apart from Vader, isn't just that exciting. It feels like it's over now. I don't think we're going to see more of her and Anakin in The World Between Worlds, because I don't think that's how it works. Based on how things they left things with her and him, I don't really think we saw her finish her training, so to speak. I mean, I'm completely invested in this show, but it could be better. And we're running out of time, and I'm running out of goodwill. I really enjoyed the young Ahsoka scenes, but for me, those weren't enough to erase some of the issues that I have in my mind.
May the Force be with you,
and also with you. Just one more thing.
Part 6 comes out Tuesday, September 19th. Part 7 on Tuesday, September 26th. The finale, Part 8, on October 3rd. 3 episodes left. And that Tuesday, September 19th, that's Talk Like a Pirate Day, by the way. Jennifer Getzinger handles directing for Part 6. Is it called The Pirate again, like one of the Mandalorian episodes? Geeta Fassat will be in the chair for Part 7. Not Filoni, not Favreau, but Rick Famuyiwa gets to send us off in the first season finale of Ahsoka.
This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
So what are your thoughts? I'm sure not everyone agrees with me, and I'm sure that people stop listening when I talk honestly about shows that I feel aren't good, but I don't know any other way. You can send feedback or comments via email at thisisthewaypodcast@gmail.com. Yes, you can send it on Twitter and Instagram at thisisthewaypod. I'll probably see them. Or on facebook.com/thisisthewaypod. Our Linktree site has all the links at linktr.ee/thisisthewaypod. And if you want to be part of the discussion, you have to reach out to me. Thank you for joining me for the 5th episode of Ahsoka, Shadow Warrior. I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo, and this is the way. May the Force be with you always.